Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we are giving ourselves a break. Not what usually comes to mind when you hear the word judgment, but enough already. Why so harsh? Don't you deserve the benefit of the doubt? A second chance? Maybe a third or fourth? Freedom, for goodness sake. If you're tuning in because this show might have some political mudslinging or sensitive and controversial topics to weigh in on, then sorry to disappoint. Encouragementology covers positive alternatives to life's little challenges in a lighthearted and all-inclusive kind way. Stay with me. I promise to give you a new perspective or at least some encouragement to get you over the hump. Ready to put down the gavel and start living a judgment-free life? So when did you become your harshest critic? You might not even realize that you are just that, harsh or your own critic. Things we feel or say about ourselves in the privacy of our own minds are just that, private, and no one knows, but unless we wear these judgments, we give ourselves. We walk into a room with them. We introduce them to potential friends or business associates. We expose them through our words and our actions. All of the above are hurting us and alienating others, whether we fully are conscious of it or not. But not to fear. We're going to be exploring all these ideas, looking for the why, and then, of course, the what next. Sometimes I feel like two different people with distinct personalities and purposes, each with their own set of strengths and weaknesses. I like elements of them both, and at times I wish they could merge and be on the same page. Before you reach out for professional help for me, let me explain. Professionally, I'm strong, assertive, confident, direct, and sometimes even stubborn. Well, probably really stubborn, but I'm intentionally giving myself a break here. People who meet me professionally would echo these traits, even calling me persistent, tenacious, strategic, and futuristic in my thinking. Personally, however, I don't always feel these strengths. Oh, I can talk for sure, I'm direct, and I do have plenty of opinions, but I'm not as confident in what I'm saying or doing. There are times when I need validation, and as much as that's hard to admit, it's true. I seek approval, and without it, I'm left wanting and a little lost. This is partly because I'm a classic people pleaser, which is not a simple thing to correct. My knee jerk will always be to please and seek approval. Since I'm now fully aware of this behavior, I can sometimes correct it on my own. Progress. Also, Matt is very understanding and gently helps me see the reality when I'm spinning. I used to judge this aspect of myself pretty harshly, making light of it. Through this journey and this walk, I'm learning it's okay not to have everything figured out, not to be perfect in all areas of your life, and to let people see your vulnerable side when you need understanding. Hannah Brooks Olson kicks off our exploration with the spotlight effect, when you're your own worst critic, in an article she wrote for thecreativelive.com. Don't you just love this quote, even if it's hard to believe? You will become way less concerned with what other people think of you when you realize how seldom they do. That was from David Foster Wallace in 1996. 3 years later, a pair of psychologists would give the same sentiment a name, the spotlight effect. What Wallace and later researchers Thomas Gilovich and Kenneth Savitsky were explaining, something that creative professionals and really just about anyone struggles with all the time. The feeling that everyone is judging us at every turn and that everyone sees the flaws that we think are the most glaring. In an episode for Freakonomics Radio, University of Chicago professor Nicholas Ipley explains how being an expert on something can actually make you less attuned to the experience of that thing than others, and that includes yourself. If you can't understand what other people think and how you're being seen by other people, it's very hard to lead or manage them effectively. One thing that makes it hard to understand what others are thinking is that we tend to rely on our own mind, perhaps a little too much, when it's not necessarily perfectly appropriate to do so. In the episode, Ipley gives the example of an experiment where a subject was asked to wear an embarrassing t-shirt. The subject was then told to enter a room, then quickly called back out. Researchers then asked the subject how many people would identify what the subject was wearing on the t-shirt. Unsurprisingly, the subject is almost always sure that everyone noticed, when in fact, almost no one, actually, no one noticed. This means that when we think that everyone is judging us, that everyone else is dialing into our smallest flaws and all of our biggest concerns about ourselves, the truth is that they're probably much more preoccupied with their own struggles and flaws. We just assume they are consumed with ours, because we are. But we're not the most reliable source on that subject. Often researchers and psychologists refer to the spotlight effect as a product of egocentrism, when in truth, it's really more about the fact that we all tend to default to the subjects that we know the most about. In the vast majority of cases, that's ourselves and our own experiences. And interestingly, the spotlight effect almost always plays more on our flaws than on our advantages. We tend to assume that people notice our poorest moments more than our greatest ones, and that our flaws are more defining traits. This is what makes us terrible critics of our own work, and what keeps us from pursuing challenges that might seem slightly out of range. Understanding our own ability to judge how others see us can make us emotionally stronger, and can also make us more empathetic to others, allowing us to be better listeners and contributors in the workplace as well as in our personal lives. In her book, I Thought It Was Just Me, But It Isn't, Dr. Brené Brown describes a trait called shame resilience, which essentially means they're able to move past feelings of shame to succeed. Over and over, the women I interviewed explained how empathy is the strongest antidote for shame. It's not just about having our needs for empathy met. Shame resilience requires us to be able to respond empathetically to others. A big part, then, of this shame resilience and of getting out of our own way creatively is the understanding that everyone is suffering from the same spotlight effect and that everyone needs to be treated kindly, ourselves included. Julianne Cost is a Creative Live instructor, and she explained how she gets out from under the crushing weight of the spotlight effect. I have a lot of self-limiting beliefs. To curb her negative self-talk and to remind herself that her harshest criticism is internal, not external, she writes down the reason she thinks she can't do things. Often, she says, that helps her move past the feeling of limitation because she realizes that those forces aren't external, but they're internal. Though it can feel supremely isolating, one of the most important elements about the spotlight effect is to remember that it impacts just about everyone at some point. Just as Wallace wrote, people don't think about you as often as you think they do. Oh, if we could just believe that every time. But our first reaction, or maybe it's just me, doubt it though, is to say, oh no, what did I do now? Immediately, I put myself at fault, no matter what it is. I start searching my mind and replaying scenarios, believing I can piece together what the other person might be thinking about me. Have you ever heard of Don Miguel Ruiz and his four agreements? Let me tell you what they are. Number one, be impeccable with your word. Number two, don't take anything personally. Number three, don't make assumptions. And number four, always do your best. But the one I want to highlight here is don't take anything personally. Whatever happens around you, don't take it personally. Nothing other people do is because of you. Let me say that again. Nothing other people do is because of you. It's because of themselves. All people live in their own dream, in their own minds. They are in completely different worlds from one another. When we take something personally, we make the assumption that they know what is in our world, and we try to impose our world on their world. Even when a situation seems so personal, even if others insult you directly, it has nothing to do with you. What they say, what they do, and the opinions they give are according to the agreements they have in their own minds. Taking things personally makes you easy prey for these predators. They can hook you easily with one little opinion and feed you whatever poison they want. And because you take it personally, you eat it up. As you make a habit of not taking anything personally, you won't need to place your trust in what others do or say. You will only need to trust yourself to make responsible choices. You are never responsible for the actions of others. You are only responsible for you. When you truly understand this and refuse to take things personally, you can hardly be hurt by the careless comments and actions of others. Now, if you let that perspective take root, you water it and nurture it, you will feel the freedom in it. LaConciergePsychologist.com gives us 10 ways to stop being our worst critic. Everyone faces criticism at times. Obviously, this is not a fun experience, especially if the person criticizing you is someone you love. And for many people, they are actually the harshest critics they'll ever face. Their internal monologue can be relentlessly self-critical. Thankfully, there are ways to stop being your own worst critic. Why are you so self-critical? It's pretty confusing. Why would somebody be so hard on themselves? Here are some common reasons: low self-esteem, depression, your motivation to do better taken to the extreme, perfectionism, which is really a fear of failure, internalized ableism, racism, ageism, homophobia, etc., childhood experiences that led you to believe you are unworthy. Self-compassion versus self-criticism. Is there a difference? Think about when you see news about a good deed or a random act of kindness. How fast do you like or share such a post? You know that compassion is admirable. It's also a very human quality, yet so few of us aim compassion inward at ourselves. Self-compassion helps teach you that you are worthy and imperfect. Imperfections don't mean that you don't deserve kindness, love, or compassion. You're flawed, just like everyone else. Therefore, some missteps are inevitable and normal. You're worthy of acceptance and forgiveness. You deserve to be treated well by others and by yourself. So, here are 10 ways to stop being your worst critic. Number one, be your own BFF. If your best friend is having a tough time, imagine how you would speak to them. you probably aren't mean towards them. Instead, you probably lend them a non-judgmental ear, right? Perhaps you give them encouragement. Breaking news! You can aim that same kindness and patience at yourself. Number 2, journaling. By putting pen to paper, you can begin looking at your experiences through a different lens, a more self-compassionate lens. Now remember, journaling doesn't have to be this grand act only reserved for professional writers and linguistics experts. It's just capturing moments and recreating memories for your own use. I used to feel guilty when I started a new journal. You know, missing a day, forgetting about it for a month at a time, then scrambling to fill in all the blanks. Oh, the pressure. Now I just write when I want, when I feel like it, what I want to write. It may be 3 sentences or a whole page, but it's still precious to me. Number 3. Identify what we can and cannot control. So much is out of our control. We criticize ourselves for not having more control and doing better. Try to identify what you are and aren't responsible for. Show compassion for the mistakes you made in areas you could not control. Number 4, mindfulness. Focused on the past, we may feel guilt or shame. Thinking about the future can provoke anxiety. In the present moment lives a deeper acceptance of ourselves. Instead of passing judgment on our experiences and reactions, be curious and non-judgmental. It's a good place to mention, don't use the present moment as a denial for not dealing with your past. I need to stay in the present. I won't think about today. I'll wait till tomorrow. Oh wait, tomorrow I need to do the same. I guess I just won't deal with it at all. It also may not need months of attention either. Recognizing the event, owning your responsibility, uncovering the learning and takeaway, forgiving yourself and others, letting go and moving on. Depending on the situation, that can all take place rather quickly when dealt with at all. Other instances might take longer. Number 5, practice breathing exercises. With breathing exercises, our mind calms. Then we're able to more clearly see ourselves in the situation. And typically, that way is more self-compassionate and less self-critical. It also gives you time and space to really react. Sometimes, we're so quick to react and we rely on our default knee-jerk reaction, which isn't always the best. Deep breaths, a little mindfulness, and now we can see the situation for what it is. Number 6, distinguish self-compassion from complacency. Slowing down to care for yourself is not the same thing as being lazy. On the contrary, self-compassion breaks can help you improve your performance. You really know that when you're depressed or panicked, things don't go well, right? Self-compassion also provides the mindset needed to accurately look at your performance and behavior. Otherwise, people are too afraid of going down a shame spiral. Number 7, create a self-compassion mantra. The most effective mantras incorporate all 3 aspects of self-compassion: self-kindness, belief in a common humanity, and mindfulness. For example, I'm having a really hard time right now. Everyone feels this way sometimes. I can tolerate this feeling. May I give myself the compassion I need. And by the way, you don't need a mantra creating app for this practice. In fact, this is a good time to mention that being mindful and soul searching really needs to be unaided. You need some time to think and ponder, wonder, and listen. The first break we get from whatever we're doing, what do? Grab something else to occupy our mind in a different way. Now, I'm a big reader and I'm learning Spanish. I have all the social media apps along with music and videos. But seriously, build in some breaks to just sit quietly, hands in your lap, empty, and think. Let ideas flow in and out of your mind. When they feel negative, fearful, or anxious, breathe in very slowly, let it out the same, and tell yourself, right now, you're okay. We are up to number 8, express gratitude. Often, we wish for what we're missing or lacking. There is power in appreciating what we do have. Start a gratitude practice. It can be as simple as writing down 3 things you're grateful for each night. By focusing on our blessings, we employ a gentler inner voice. That helps us move the focus away from our shortcomings. Instead, we focus outward to the world with all its beauty. Now, who hasn't heard about a gratitude practice at this point? But just like a mantra, it really does work. Don't want to be so formal? Try using this practice when you feel frustrated and judgmental. For instance, I was due for a haircut, but prior to, I was frustrated with my hair. It was so fluffy and thick and just wouldn't do what I needed it to do. I inwardly and outwardly expressed my frustration more than once. Then it hit me. Hey, ding dong, there are people suffering from premature baldness who would give anything to have your kind of problem. Too much hair. Goodness, get over yourself. Now, that isn't exactly a gentle example of gratitude, but that came next. I'm so thankful that I have so much hair to style in so many different ways. I'm thankful that I have to schedule a haircutting appointment at all because of having too much unruly hair. Number 9, challenge the negativity. Too often, we accept our thoughts as facts. Don't accept the negativity swirling around in your head as truth. Respond with more neutral and positive statements. You can think of this as debating your inner critic. Countering critical self-talk with positive self-affirmations can derail a negative mindset and slow down your shame spirals. Maybe give it the, oh yeah. So when you're getting a negative thought, you can listen to yourself and then say, oh yeah, but guess what? Number 10, schedule regular self-compassion breaks. Lastly, you can use all these tips on a regular basis. Incorporate self-compassion into your daily self-care routine. Regularly flex your self-compassion muscles. They'll strengthen and become almost second nature to you. I realize self-help and the journey of self-discovery can sometimes feel like a drudge riddled with rules and restrictions, if you want to see it that way. I mean, practice self-care, be mindful and self-aware, forgive yourself of the past, but live in the present. Don't overanalyze the future. Let go of the negative, only allow in the positive. Whew, if we just roll around in the pile of self-help, we are assured to be overwhelmed, frustrated, and ready to give up. Who needs to better themselves anyway? Stop and repeat. Right now, I'm okay. There's no rush to get life or your purpose in it figured out. Your journey needs to be about exploration and discovery, sharing, learning, and growing, researching where you question, and wrestling with what doesn't make sense. Your life isn't an almost completed puzzle missing just one piece. You might be working on the border or that crazy sky pattern where all the clouds look exactly the same. And other times, you're lost in the million blades of grass. So just relax and enjoy the process. Goshen shares how to let go of judging yourself from onewithitnow.com. Happiness is something we all strive for. Wouldn't you say that's true? In the name of happiness, we seek relationships that bring out the best in us, or so we think, and look for experiences that will make us happier. If and when it becomes obvious that part of our happiness has to do with us, not others or situations, we look into self-improvement. We dig deeper into our own psyche, try to eliminate beliefs, follow our dreams, and get healthier. And we feel good when we do well. We think that we're growing and improving. But when we don't live up to our own expectations, we judge ourselves. Then we beat ourselves up with some more judging. In effect, we judge judgment with more judgment. Say that out loud a few times, and it's as confusing as the feeling. Self-judgment is the root of a lot, if not all, of our unhappiness. It's the opposite of unconditional self-acceptance. Genuine happiness that's not contingent upon our actions, the actions of others, or the situations we're dealing with. I still judge myself, even when I try to accept myself. As I look into my own behavior, I realize that letting go of self-judgment is the best way to move towards self-acceptance. Before the how, I'd like to share a few thoughts about judgment. Judgment is an opinion. It's either positive, that's good, I want more of it, or negative, that's bad, I don't ever want to feel that way again. Resistance to reality. When we negatively judge what happened, we're saying no to the reality of this moment. An attempt to control life. We try to control our behavior and feelings through a set of rigid expectations. We chase a self-made ideal, and when we don't live up to it, we judge ourselves. If we truly dig into all of the self-judgment, we'll find an adolescent dictator telling us how to behave, completely driven by emotion. A few examples to illustrate this point. I should have aced that interview. I'm such an idiot. Hopeless. Why can't I have fun like the rest of humanity? What's wrong with me? He hasn't called. Of course he won't. I'm so boring. I shouldn't have said that. I'm so cruel and evil. Why can't I give myself a break? I'm so harsh. These are just a few examples. Look into your life and see how often you judge yourself. How many thoughts carry with them an opinion about what you should or shouldn't be doing, feeling, or saying? Recognizing self-judgment is one thing. Letting it go is much harder. Why is it harder to let go of judging ourselves versus judging others? Think of letting go of judgment as preemptive forgiveness of self and others. Instead of suppressing negative emotions and letting them fester, then deciding to forgive and let go, we process the feelings as they arise and let them go without assigning meaning or opinion. And like forgiveness, letting go seems easier when it relates to others rather than ourselves. Easier to look outside. When we judge others, we can see how it affects them, whether it's an emotional outburst, a change in mannerism and tone, or a defensive reaction. It's easier for us to become aware of what's outside of us. Also, it's easier for us to give others a break than ourselves. Deeply rooted and familiar. Self-judgment is an intimate act that takes place in the abyss of the subconscious. Not only we won't be able to see it, it's so deep that it forms part of our identity and story. We've been judging ourselves for so long that it feels like second nature, almost innate. This makes it way harder to strip the layers upon layers of judgment to uncover the only truth. We were born free of judgment. Letting go of self-judgment is very hard, but it's not impossible. If you agree with this, let's explore a little bit more of what you can do about it. This is by no means a definitive guide. It's just a three-step process that, if you work it on a regular basis, can help you let go of judgment. Okay, number one, notice. Most self-judgments are automated. It happens so fast that the conscious mind can barely grasp what just happened. So the first step is to try as much as possible to notice the feelings of judgment when they come up. It will slow down the process and the reaction. Okay, so just notice. Notice when it's happening. Self-awareness, right? Number two, allow. When it comes to emotions, most of the time we are also so automatic. Our emotional response is habitual. If it's something we like, we want more. And if it's unpleasant, we resist, suppress, or avoid. In order to break the habit, instead of wanting more or less of an emotion, we can just allow it to be. We can feel it as it comes with all the accompanying thoughts and physical responses. We can feel the anger, the sadness, or the fear as it shows up in our mind and body. And if judgment of the feeling comes up, we can feel the judgment as well. Feelings are like thoughts. They're fleeting. As unpleasant as they can be, they'll pass if we don't keep pushing them down and rejecting them. And number three, actively choose to let go. This is where a conscious choice needs to be made. Either let go of the experience, judgment, and emotion, or hold on to them. It really boils down to a single choice. Anything we hold on to is by choice. The memory or feeling may be triggered by different situations. When that happens, we can let it go or we can dwell and judge. It's that simple. We may have the same underlying feelings and judgments, but how we internalize them is quite personal. So no two people will let go of a feeling the same way. There are no rules for letting go, just like there are no rules for holding on. Do what you feel is right for you at the moment. If it helps, you can visualize letting go. For example, imagine putting the judgment into a hot air balloon and letting it fly away until it disappears. Or place it in a boat and let it sail off towards the horizon. When you choose to let go, mental arguments and more feelings might come up again. Repeat the process. Notice, feel, let go. As many times as needed until you feel a calm stillness with hardly any emotion behind it. The best test is to think of the situation again a bit later and see if it brings up any feelings. If it does, let go some more. If it doesn't, you have cleared away some unhelpful feelings and judgments. Depending on how deep the automated feelings are, some things we can let go of in a few minutes. Others might require that we do the best we can at the time and choose to let go of wanting to completely dissolve the judgment. Be kind to yourself. And when the issue comes up again, we let go of it one more time, then another time, and when it comes up again, and so on. An example. Let's say I've been judging myself for years for all the things I want to do that I haven't done yet. The feelings can be triggered by anything that reminds me of what I should be doing. As I think about it, I start judging myself. Depending on my mood at the moment, the judgment can be mild, I'm lazy, to feelings of anger, emptiness, all the way down to loathing. When I recognize that I'm being judgmental, I start thinking about my inability to cope with emotions and argue with how I'm handling them. When the above cycle goes unchecked, I end up feeling tired and depressed. Nothing helpful comes of it. All I did was add one more layer of judgment and negativity. So instead of the same habitual pattern, When the thought that I haven't made progress comes up, I can stop right there and do the following. Notice the thought and the feelings that come up. Open up and hear the thoughts that are buzzing in my head and/or see the mental images. Feel how my body is reacting, a knot in my stomach, my body temperature rising, a wave of anger rushing through my head and upper body. I stay with it and direct my attention to where that feeling is showing in the body. Once the feelings subside, I say to myself, I choose to let go of what I didn't do. I allow myself to just be. Then I imagine all of my feelings and expectations clearing my body and flying out into outer space. I'll repeat the process as many times as I need until no feelings come up. Letting go of self-judgment is not dependent on what you do or don't do. The best action is not driven by judgment, guilt, or wanting to prove a point. It's good enough on its own and for its own sake. Judgment is not based on logic, but on emotion and conditioned reactivity that does not care one iota about rationality or perspective. To let go is to give yourself permission to feel and be okay with yourself as you are, without the complications of the intellect or the demands of action. When we gradually let go of self-judgment, we'll ease on our judgment of others. Over time, we will dissolve a lot of the emotional habits and beliefs that have weighed us down for so long, almost effortlessly. Letting go of judging ourselves is one of the hardest things to do, but it's truly a liberating and life-transforming act. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit Encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, put down the gavel and give yourself a break. Break the cycle of shame, guilt, and judgment. Spend precious time with yourself thinking, wondering, and listening. Stifle the critic, say no to self-judgment, and allow your goodness to shine through. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. I stumbled through until the path was clear.